I want to conclude with some observations about a set of interconnected issues that are currently challenging the field and Erickson. They have to do with funding, standards, curriculum, assessment, and evaluation for early childhood programs for poor and minority children, program components that are necessary to bridge the achievement gap. The good news is that our belief in the value of early educational intervention now has widespread support. Research on the Perry Preschool Project, the Chicago Child Parent Centers, and the Absiderian Project have convinced the public that when young children from low-income and minority families attend a high-quality preschool, it changes not only their school achievement, but their lives. While model programs have shown great success, going to scale with them has been complicated and required more political will than so far we've been able to muster. For example, poor children who attend Head Start achieve better than their peers who do not, but not at level found in model programs. This means that intervention programs do not automatically address educational disadvantages. In order to be effective, the programs require extensive human and material resources, an array of services tightly coordinated and easily accessed, and a long-term commitment to service. Such high-quality programs are not easy to implement and are expensive to run. The first issue, then, is the adequate funding of preschool programs for children at risk. If we look at Chicago, for example, we find the Child Parent Centers, the most successful large intervention program, costs approximately $13,000 per child per year. We spend approximately $6,000 a year for a child in Head Start, but only $4,500 in state pre-kindergarten. Children without an educational subsidy in child care, the cost is as little as $3,500 a year. Thus, we must compromise what we know about what is effective by what the public is willing to pay. Our problem is to find out how to mobilize the collective will to adequately fund our early childhood programs for poor children so that the promise of preschool can be achieved. We hope our new Public Policy Institute will play a role in that. Even if preschool programs for at-risk children were adequately funded, there are still a number of controversial issues. One is the use of standards to guide programs and to designate learning outcomes for children. Many early childhood educators object to standards because individual children and families are so different, and one size doesn't fit all. Critics also note that standards are generally quite narrowly defined. Children know and can do so much more than we can encode in a standard. Additionally, learning standards tend to focus on school-related skills and knowledge and omit other important learning, like getting along with others, or learning to assert oneself, or divergent thinking, and so on. While it is true that different people need different things, it is not true that programs without explicit standards have no standards. The standards are simply the biases of a particular teacher, parent, or whatever adult is making the decisions. In fact, no standards really mean everyone gets to use his own standards without subjecting them to scrutiny. Expectations are hidden behind such excuses as, we teach what is best for each individual, and we use the teachable moment, so you can't plan ahead or predict what children will learn. The result of this is that it's difficult to determine what teachers are teaching and children are learning. It seems to me that this is an ethical problem. Parents and community have a right to hold programs accountable for what they offer to children and expect them to learn. Our problem is to figure out how to be specific about what we want children to learn without making standards so narrow they limit education or so extensive we encumber the teachers with a litany of meaningless expectations. Allied with the issue of standards is the question of curriculum. If we align curriculum with standards, the result could be standardized and scripted academic curricula, which push learning toward short-term, test-responsive skills instead of promoting big ideas, enthusiasm for learning, and socially constructive behavior. This could have particularly dire consequences for poor African-American, Latino, and Native American children, those most likely to be exposed to rote learning and academic curricula. This concern is not new. The National Association for the Education of Young Children sounded the alarm in 1978 about what they call push-down curriculum for preschoolers, curriculum that focused on early introduction of academic skills while using didactic instructional models. NAYC recommended instead developmentally appropriate curriculum, DAP, which ought to be familiar to everybody. Their model called for curriculum that emphasized self-directed, play-based activities with interest areas such as puzzle, unit blocks, drawing, etc., to promote cognitive development, and with non-directive adults. DAP drew criticism for two reasons. It was seen as unresponsive to cultural differences in learning styles and limited opportunities for poor and minority children to learn school-related skills and knowledge. The indirect teaching model being recommended by NAYC was not necessarily the only appropriate way to teach, and the emphasis on self-directed play often left poor children less prepared for school than other children. A revision of DAP in 1989 addressed this issue by stating that developmentally appropriate practice should not force a choice between formal content and active play-based curriculum, between free choice and more formal instruction. Good curricula can and should include content important to children's school success and be delivered in a way that is culturally relevant. However, NAYC contended that curriculum should be built on a solid developmental foundation that addresses social and emotional development as well as school skills. My sense is that there's little disagreement in the field about the goal of DAP, but considerable confusion about how to achieve it. For example, pre-kindergarten for all programs are half-day ones, and early childhood teachers are expected to incorporate all of children's developmental needs in the 2.5-hour program. If that's not possible, what should they teach and what should be left for families to teach during the remainder of the day? Take pre-play, for instance. Psychologists, anthropologists, as well as early childhood educators, point out the essential nature of this type of play to development. But the question remains, to what extent is it necessary that we build it into the 2.5-hour program? This is the kind of question that we need to study and answer. And finally, the field is concerned about how to assess and hold programs for young children accountable. Many early childhood educators worry that in the name of accountability, we will use inappropriate and potentially dangerous assessment strategies. They are concerned that learning outcomes will be assessed without finding out if the conditions for learning are in place. We've made some progress identifying the structural and process variables related to early learning, but sadly, measuring them remains a challenge. Measuring outcomes is even more problematic. Teacher assessment, portfolios, classroom observers, and achievement tests have all been found wanting. Teacher judgments may be biased. It's difficult to standardize portfolios. Children are suspicious of outside observers, and tests are often poor, and children poor test takers. The goal of accountability should be to make sure that both the conditions for learning and the measures for learning are coordinated. We have a long way to go in figuring out how to do this. Answers to these questions are high on the agenda at Erickson. The faculty, along with our school's project coaches, are doing research, working with teachers in schools and centers, writing and speaking about these problems and their solutions. It's important work. We have many challenges ahead, but it's a joy to see how far we have come. Our alumni who have inspired us and who are doing great things for children are evidence that we've been successful. What more could you ask of the first 40 years? I'm looking forward to the next 40. I hope you are too.